Boogie woogie rock and roll. All right, I'll do it for real. Hang on. Linoleum knife. Okay, so we saw The Identical.
Oh, man, did we see The Identical.
Blah, blah, blah things. You went to the Venice Film Festival.
Thank you again, Peter DeBruce.
Your name is Alonzo Duralde. You're the whatever. You're from somewhere.
The Rap.
The Rap.
And What the Flick.
And What the Flick. I'm Dave White. I'm the king and president of movies.com.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why. Which is why my reviews don't seem to get posted on time anymore.
No, apparently.
It's all my fault.
There's been a coup.
That's a lie.
No, I don't know.
I'm neither the president nor the king of movies.com. I don't know why my reviews aren't being posted on time. I can't figure it out. Nobody can seem to figure it out. Technical problems are overwhelming everyone in the internet, at least with my employer.
They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I'm sure
but they are my employer.
Yes. And that's what matters, really.
I have employment.
That's the key thing.
Yeah. And this is Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Peter DeBruge was me last week.
Yes.
While you were in Venice.
Did you enjoy your week off?
I did. It was great.
Did you enjoy a week away from me?
I did. It was great.
Mm-hmm. I'm the light of your life.
You know what's great? I'll tell you what's awesome about you not being here. That big old bed, it's all mine.
Mm-hmm.
All mine. I can make
you splay out like a swastika.
I make a swastika with my body.
Like they say in the women?
Yeah. The, you know what? It's funny, like, married people, it is good to have time apart from your marriage spouse.
Absolutely.
I
don't know how Paul and Linda did it. They claim to have never spent an evening apart over however many years.
McCartney?
Yeah.
Never spent an evening apart.
That's what they said.
How was that possible?
Well, you know what? I bet there were probably times where she went to the West Wing, you know, and he stayed in the East
Wing. Right, but they had dinner together or whatever.
Exactly.
Right. It's good to have time away. Here's what the amount of time I like. 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
I like 3 days. 3 days is good. The first day is great because it's like the first day of summer vacation. You're like, what? I could do anything I want. There's no rules.
The place to myself.
And as Sonia always says down at Irv's, when she finds out one of us is out of town, party time.
Right.
That's her stock thing to say. Party time. You were gone 6 days. I worked on my book.
Good.
Yeah. I rejected all manner of social invitations. And you, like, hung out in some other country, seeing movies, blah, blah, walking around, eating amazing foods.
Yeah, that's all I did.
Seeing the old world of Europe. I'm sure it was great.
It was great, actually. I'd never been to this film festival before, and it's one of the big international ones, so it's another one I can scratch off my list. I've still never been to Cannes, but, you know, I've now been to Toronto, and I've been to Venice and Sundance. So, you know, that's kind of cool. I got a little sick. You may hear me sounding a little sinusy today because I did tried to dump being a day of tourism on top of meeting deadlines and seeing movies and filing reviews and keeping weird hours, which was probably a mistake. But, you know, who knows when I'm going to be there again? How could I not have a day of tourism? So Peter and I took the boat across to Venice proper because the festival happens on the Lido. And
I'm looking at your mustache.
I was
going
to say, why are you staring at me?
Your mustache is looking a little off kilter.
Well, I just got out of the shower.
Like it's crooked or something.
I'll glue it
back on in a better way.
I'll do that. Anyway, God, you're the rudest person. Anyway, so we went to Venice proper for the day and just sort of, you know, walked around the streets. And
I just care about your personal presentation.
This is an audio show. No one cares about our personal presentation.
For my own sake, I care about your
saw some churches and went to the Peggy Guggenheim Museum, which was really cool. They had this really great show called For Your Eyes Only, which was not about Roger Moore, unfortunately. but it was this crazy some rich couple's like highlights from their collection, and these people have very sort of like good Tim Burton taste in art. Like everything.
Who are they? What do you mean, good Tim Burton?
In terms of just you know, lots of skeletons and things, but not in a dull, gothy, Hot Topic way, but in a cool way. You know,
like Ensor, like stuff like that.
Dude, I don't know. You're asking me about art, and I can't talk to you at art in the language that you understand. There's a catalog. Maybe Santa will be giving you a copy of that catalog. And then you'll know all about it. And then you can explain it to me.
Is that where you took the picture of the Cy Twombly?
I'm a dumb... No, the Cy Twombly is part of their permanent collection.
Oh, okay.
No. They had... The thing in that show that I really liked, it was this like 17th or 18th century painting of Don Quixote, but it was all done where he was made up of fruits and vegetables and machine parts and stuff, which seemed very contemporary. But no, this was, you know, it was really old.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so...
I don't know that one.
So, Venice was great. And, but, yeah, you know, you're right. 3 days or so...
Thanks for the Christmas spoiler, by the way.
When I leave for... well, you know, maybe. I said maybe. There's no promises.
That means it's happening.
You don't know. Maybe Santa can't find it in English yet.
You don't need to... You know what? The essays don't matter.
So yeah, no, it was cool. But you're right. I'm the same way. When I leave town, it's kind of like I feel like, you know,
yippee,
woo. And then after 3 days, I'm like, I wish Dave were here.
I miss Dave White so much because he's the number one and the best.
Yeah, that's exactly how my brain phrases that. So it's the weekend after Labor Day. Not a lot of giant releases. We worried there wasn't going to be enough to talk about this week, and oh, it turns out there is.
A whole bunch.
But before we get to The Identical, we'll knock out a couple real quick. First of all, I saw Frontera, which has been available on demand and opened theatrically limited this weekend.
I'm already bored by the discussion of this film.
I'll get through it as quickly as possible. So Ed Harris plays a retired sheriff living on the Arizona border. Michael Pena and... Eva Longoria are Mexicans, and he wants to cross over and get work in the United States. As he winds up on Ed Harris's land, Harris's wife, Amy Madigan, rides out and offers him water and a blanket and is very nice and kind of tells him where he can find work. But at that moment, these local kids who decide they're going to shoot at Mexicans to scare them off start firing upon them, and they accidentally kill Amy Madigan, and Michael Pena gets the blame for it, and things start getting really complicated. It's one of those movies with a lot of intertwining stories among very few people, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, per se. Like it's a little crashy. It's not real preachy about immigration stuff, which points for that, but it's not all that engaging dramatically. I mean, you know, Eva Longoria then comes across the border to find Michael Pena.
Say it like Oprah.
Eva Longoria! and horrible, horrible things happen to her. I'll tell you, I have seen a couple of movies now where Eva Longoria is trying to play, like, you know, woman of the rainforest or, you know, sort of like really working the Central South American angle. And
she's trying.
No, absolutely. I give her points for taking unglam roles. However, she usually tends to be a little glam still. Like, she doesn't, you don't completely buy it. In this one,
well,
I gotta say...
she's Eva Longoria.
Yeah, but I bought it.
There's
in this
a reason
one.
She's on a TV soap.
Yeah, you know? you can only frump her so
sometimes
much.
Sometimes anatomy is destiny sometimes.
Totally. So, you know, but she's really good in this. Even before, like...
What does she say in Valley of Dolls? Your damn classy looks or something
exactly,
like that?
Yeah. I didn't get a pass on account of my damn classy looks.
That's right.
Yeah, so her damn classy looks do not get in the way this time. And I'm not saying that just because, like, she plays a character that horrible things happen to. Even before that, just, you know, these sort of quiet scenes of her, you know, back on the, you know, in the house in Mexico and stuff. I bought her, and I thought she was good. I mean, the performances are all good. Michael Peña's always interesting. You know, Ed Harris, Amy Madigan are old pros. I just wish this movie were more dynamic. It just sort of lies there, and, you know, you kind of nod your head at, yes, you know, we should be kinder to each other, and yes, you know, there is discrimination, and it's like, yeah, but tell me something I don't know, you know, or at least tell me in a more interesting way. So there's that. Also opening this weekend.
Are you done? Is it done?
We're done. We're done with Frontier.
Oh, good.
Also this weekend is God Help the Girl, which is the debut film from Stuart, what's his last name?
Murdoch
from Bell and Sebastian. Big hit at Sundance this year, and it is, okay, Dave's going to tell this story because he thinks that it somehow proves something about me not understanding music, but
I don't have a story to tell. I don't have anything to say.
Oh, God. I accidentally said...
This isn't really even a story.
No. You've been gloating about this. And it's stupid. I accidentally said everything but the girl instead of Belle and Sebastian because the movie ends with the words the girl.
Here's what happened. You walked into the living room in the morning. You had just kind of woken up. So you weren't ready to have a conversation yet. You were never ready to have a conversation until about two cups of coffee.
Yes.
And about a good hour of staring at your phone doing phone things. I know that I'm not supposed to ask you a question, do anything.
You learn the hard way.
Acknowledge your existence. Nothing. Mm. The only thing that gets you going in the first hour of the morning, if it's happening within the first hour of your day, is waffles. Like, if I've got breakfast foods ready to go, then you're like, ooh, I'm perking up now. But you still don't want to talk. Mm. So you violated your own rule, all right, by walking into the living room. I'm sitting at the dining room table, my office.
Also our recording studio.
And you said, did you get a screening notice for that Everything But the Girl movie? And I said, what are you talking about? He goes, the guy from Everything But the Girl. There's a movie. I was like, the guy from Everything But the Girl is in a movie? Has made a movie? What movie? Is it a documentary? What's happening? You said, let me check. You look back. You go, no, it's called God Help the Girl. And I go, okay, but is this still the thing with Everything But the Girl? Like, is the guy, is Ben Watt from Everything But the Girl responsible for this film in some way? I don't know. Then it turns out, no, it's from the guy from Belle and Sebastian.
I knew it was a British band, and the girl was in my head.
So Everything But the Girl can't help it.
Thank you, yes.
Yeah, starring.
So I was cobbling together.
The Ghost.
Starring Jack Morrison.
Of Jane Mansfield.
Yes, so anyway, so I got all baffled there.
See, I told you, it wasn't even a story.
Okay, well, yeah, but you were carrying on.
But it makes me laugh.
Like I was like grandma not knowing the difference between the Beatles and the Stones or something.
But that is what you are.
The Rolling Who, you know.
You are the grandma who doesn't know.
Yeah, no, that's not true.
You don't know the bands. You're not young like me.
Oh, yes. It's funny, though. The whole... I mean, it's true. I don't know... I'm
3 years older.
I know. I certainly don't know the current bands. And I was thinking...
Sure you do.
Not that much.
You know the Rihanna.
Barely.
You know the...
I know the Adele.
The Adele.
But here's what I was thinking about, though.
The Robin. You know all three of the bands.
I don't know enough about music to have strong opinions about current music, to care about current music.
Yes.
And so I don't really love current music.
Yeah.
So then when I get those complaints from people that, oh, you obviously don't like movies, it's like, no, I do like movies. I love movies. That's why I know who the players are.
I know more about them than
and
you.
And what they are, and I follow it, and I care.
Right.
If you go see a movie, and again, like, it's in focus, and there's air conditioning, and you're like, oh, that was okay, then you, sir, are the one who does not like
movies. Is there such a thing anymore as not focus?
I don't know.
Do we digital? Is digital? Can digital be not focused? Can that be? That can't be anymore.
Probably
can
not.
It?
Yeah,
it's
I
not
guess.
A thing.
You're right.
It doesn't exist anymore.
Well, okay, then if it's shown in the correct aspect ratio,
unless
I don't
you're
know.
At the New Beverly, which is all 35 millimeter.
Oh man,
we're not even going to talk.
I'm not
even going to
talk about that.
Not even going to talk about that.
That's a hullabaloo.
There's a hotbed of unpleasantry going on over there right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
And fortunately, you and I are just patrons and not friends with any single person involved in this situation.
Of the most directly involved, no, not really. I mean,
I don't know anyone.
Well,
I've met one person, but I wouldn't. They wouldn't know my name.
We certainly have friends who are being vocally partisan.
That is
on
correct.
Both sides.
That is correct.
Which is why I'm not saying anything.
Hence, Switzerland.
Exactly.
This podcast.
Super Switzerland. If you want to go Google New Beverly Cinema, you can follow the action for yourself. Anyway, how did we get to this? Oh, right, digital.
You don't know the bands.
I don't know the bands. Anyway, God help the girl. It's quite lovely. It stars Emily Browning as a troubled young woman who is in a facility and escapes and goes to Glasgow to make music. And she gets involved with an adorable, big-haired, glasses-wearing indie rock boy. There's a great scene early on where he and the drummer in the band like get into a fight on stage during a show, and they both have to take their glasses off before they start like slapping each other in the wussiest way imaginable.
It is capital A adorable.
It is.
I am lately, as you know, in the past several months, I've been limiting my sugar intake to 36 grams per day. That's the recommended amount.
And this was your substitute?
For an adult man. And this is like eating a whole box of cookies at once. Pleasurable.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, when you are done, you might feel a little woozy. A
little bit.
Yeah. The songs are sweet.
Mm-hmm.
They're Belle and Sebastian-y songs.
Yes. Yeah.
It's got an enormous amount of energy. And in that Emily Lloyd in the 80s kind of way.
Yes,
like
that's a good comparison.
Where you're like, she runs around yelling, up your bum, up your bum, up your bum. And you're like, I like that girl. Like, that's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when they're running through the streets of Glasgow, handing out flyers, looking for a guitarist, and then get chased by, like, a mob of random people.
That's fun to watch.
It's adorable.
It's
you
fun
know?
To look at.
It is. And I like the music. I was really charmed by this movie. If you have the slightest tendency.
There's not enough death.
If you have the slightest tendency to find this sort of thing just unbearably twee and precious, you will probably find this movie unbearably twee and precious. But if you, like me, enjoy movies where people just burst into song all the time for no apparent reason, and the songs are good ones, right.
I'm thinking that our friend Chris Pratt,
Chris Pratt. We now have a Chris Pratt and a Tom Ford.
We know a Tom Ford and we know a Chris Pratt. I don't know if Chris Pratt listens to us or not.
I have no idea.
But if you are listening, Chris Pratt, I know for a fact that you have zero tolerance for this kind of thing. I know this.
Stop right now.
Don't do it.
And this movie is also available on demand. So, again, even if you are not in Los Angeles or New York or whatever, you can get this movie on iTunes and Amazon and all the usual places.
For me, he's the Chris Pratt, because I don't know the other one.
Yeah. No, I remember when the first time I noticed actor Chris Pratt was in...
I would trade Tom Ford, though, for the real one.
Be nice.
He knows it. and he knows what he did.
Oh, other Tom Ford does not strike me as being fun to hang out with.
No, he would be... As big of a pain as our Tom Ford is, the famous one would be like 75 times worse.
Totally.
Yeah.
The first time I remember noticing actor Chris Pratt was in that movie, was it Wanted? Is that
I know
what
Tom
called?
Ford listens to this.
I know he does. was it Wanted? The Angelina Jolie, James McAvoy, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The Society of the Gun or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I just remember thinking, oh, wow, there's an actor named Chris Pratt. And he seems kind of like a blonde, like early chubby Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
That was my first impression.
Yeah.
Anyway, so God Help the Girl. If it sounds like your kind of thing, it might be your kind of thing. You should check it out. And now, The Identical.
You hate God.
We need to talk about The Identical.
Let's get this straight right away. You hate God.
I don't hate God. I don't believe in God. And to answer the question of God's not dead, I can't hate something I don't believe exists because I don't hate it. I just don't believe it exists.
But Alonzo, don't you know?
Hashtag that, God's not dead.
That if he, capital H, yeah, is in your dreams, nothing can stand against them.
That's the tagline of this movie. The thing, I don't even want to get...
It's a tagline that doesn't make sense.
I don't even want to get bogged down in the Christian-y and Jewish-y Christian-y nature of the movie, because it's awful... It's
negligible, really.
On its own...
In terms of the
crazy
narrative.
...crazy plane.
Yeah.
But, well, yeah, we
it's
can
something
talk about
to talk
that
about
too.
Separately.
Certainly.
But it's infused itself into this film in weird, weird ways.
By the way, I've been checking out the Twitter hashtag The Identical.
Yeah.
And the filmmakers were thanking the Promise Keepers.
Oh, good.
For promoting the film. Excellent. Because of its father-son dynamic.
What father-son dynamic?
Well, you know, all those...
Oh, the Ray Liotta and Uncanny Valley Elvis.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But, yeah, not that the Promise Keepers seem to be selling them a lot of tickets, so this movie is flopping, and I know
no,
at least...
No, don't flop The Identical.
I know at least one bad movie fan on Twitter who I talked into going to see it.
Yeah.
And he really enjoyed it. He said it was like the real Jackie Jorpchomp.
Yeah.
All right, let's explain what this movie is about first, and then we can parse the details.
Let me.
The floor is yours.
Okay, so... Brian Garrity and an actress named Amanda Crew.
She's on Silicon Valley.
Yeah. They are poor people in the 30s in the Depression. He is a Christian and she is Jewish.
In Alabama.
In Alabama. They're an interracial... Interracial.
Interfaith.
They're an interfaith marriage in Alabama in the 30s. They have twins, but they're real poor. So they give the one they don't like to Ray Liotta and Ashley Judd. Now, Ray Liotta is a preacher. By the way, we're going to tell you every single thing that happens in this movie. Okay, so don't...
The brakes are off.
This is not a spoiler-free situation that you're about to listen to. We're going to tell you everything.
And you'll still need to go see it.
And you still need to go see it because... Oh, man. Okay, so they give the baby to the preachers.
And the who cannot have children of their own.
Cannot have children of their own. They do this after Ray Liotta has preached the most fractured, bizarre, incoherent sermon that I have had the pleasure of listening to since the early 80s. When I was a member of Temple Baptist Church in Hobbs, New Mexico. A church, by the way, that produced a Southern gospel singing star.
Really?
Yeah.
Who?
A singer named Guy Penrod is the son of the guy who was the preacher at that church. And he became a very well-known Southern gospel singer.
Was he the only boy who could ever reach you?
No.
Okay.
No. But I heard some wild things from the pulpit of that church when I was a kid.
Well, yeah, usually movies having the benefit of screenwriters,
the 80s.
Sermons are more coherent.
That was the 80s. But so Brian Garrity comes into this tent revival.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, I know how tent revivals work, too. And they don't work like this. It does not happen that in 1935, a preacher in Alabama yells the first thing that he gets up in front of the mic, "Black people and white people are equal." I guarantee you that never happened. The next thing he says, completely unrelated to the first sentence, is, "Jews and Christians are equal in the eyes of God." Here's another thing that never happened back then. That.
Yeah.
And here's why I know. Because it didn't happen in the 80s either. I had... the privilege of listening to my preacher at Temple Baptist Church in Hobbs, New Mexico in 1981 tell anti-Semitic jokes in the pulpit.
Oh,
yeah.
This weekend.
I remember the joke by heart. I won't tell it right now.
Thank you.
But he did it during the Sunday sermon.
This very weekend, God's Not Dead star Kevin Sorbo said in a radio interview that Jews needed to not be so upset about the Passion of the Christ because they did kill Jesus after all. In 2014.
Thanks, Kevin Sorbo. So anyway, then the next thing that Ray Liotta says, which has nothing to do with the second sentence, which in turn had nothing to do with the first sentence, is that he and Ashley Judd have been praying for a baby, and they have not been blessed with a baby, and he gets down on his knees in front of crying Ashley Judd and puts his head on her lap, and that's a sign to Brian Garrity that they need to give the baby they like less to them.
The factory second.
They kept the baby they like more, and it became not Elvis. Now, keep following this.
Wait, you're getting ahead of yourself here.
That baby became a musical sensation named Drexel Hemsley. Nickname, The Dream. Drexel, The Dream, Hemsley. Early in Drexel Hemsley's rise to fame, posters and calendars I'm going to get back to that stuff. You just hang on. Posters and calendars and all sorts of memorabilia items are produced with Drexel Hemsley's image. His face is everywhere. This merchandise appears to have been created in 1992. All the fonts and all the everything.
The shade tipping.
The shade tipping and just the Bruce Weber-y kind of photography and stuff.
And the slick paper stock.
Yeah. It's just nuts. But this is on, you know, people's walls and things. So that's crazy. But anyway, that's a little bit of a digression. When you go see this film, and you must, you will notice these things, these incredibly wrong-headed art direction details.
That are in keeping with all the other incredibly
all the keeping
details.
With all the other incredibly wrong things. So, second baby grows up to be nobody.
It's a preacher's kid.
Preacher's kid, a mechanic. He goes into the military. He serenades all of his buddies in the military with what are essentially Elvis songs.
You are skipping
and
the Roadhouse.
I'm getting back to the Roadhouse. Mm. And the reason he can do all this is because as a teenager he learned that music was his calling. Now, Papa.
Even as a child.
Papa wants him to be a preacher. But even as a little child, music was the second baby's calling.
Right. Like when he couldn't remember a Bible verse,
he sings it.
He sings it, and he sings it
like it's Christina Aguilera.
Yeah,
in
like
church.
He invents melisma in the 1940s.
There's not a black person around, yet he is singing as though he
is a wine
is a member of like Andre Crouch and the Disciples. So,
and that the kid who plays young, not famous twin was also in A Medea Christmas. So I said on Twitter,
this kid's already doomed.
One day he's going to have a great memoir and an emancipation order.
Yes. So then he goes as a teenager to the Roadhouse, where they call it the Roadhouse. It's essentially a juke joint. I mean, it's like,
well, as Ray Liotta calls it, a honky tonk,
with one of Ray Liotta's many Southern accents.
Yes, pick one. He's got several to offer.
And In this Roadhouse honky tonk juke joint, it's him, Seth Green, and all the black people. Now, all the black people are dancing a modest 3 feet apart.
Yes, they're leaving enough room for the Holy Spirit between them.
And then suddenly, out of the blue, baby number two gets up on stage and begins to sing
a song of his own composition?
A song of his own composition entitled Boogie Woogie Rock and Roll. Here are the lyrics. Dance, 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 everybody. Dance, dance, dance. Dance, 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 everybody. Dance, dance, dance. Everybody's doing it. Boogie Woogie Rock and Roll. It sounds like the old Cinemark theater chain jingle from the late 80s, early 90s, when they had Front Row Joe as the cartoon mascot.
The cat.
And I've looked up this jingle on the YouTube, and I have found it, and it basically sounds like Boogie Woogie Rock and Roll. It's like, let's party, let's rock, in my Hubba Hubba Mustang Cinemark. Like, it's...
any commercial like by a hot dog chain where they try and summon up the spirit of the 1950s, that's what the song sounds like.
A cruise ship tribute to Happy Days.
Yes. If Mormons have a theme park and they were doing a show about
the history of rock and roll and how white people invented it.
Exactly.
Here's how it would go. They would begin by telling you that Elvis did not invent rock and roll.
Pat Boone did.
That Drexel the Dream Hemsley did not invent rock and roll. But no, Baby Number Two invented rock and roll.
Yes. What's his name?
I don't know. I call him Baby Number Two.
Ray Wade or something.
The narration, the voiceover narration of this film, tells you as much that Baby Number Two
invented rock and
roll. Invented rock and roll.
With Boogie Woogie Rock and
with
Roll.
With a song called Boogie Woogie Rock and Roll. A song that I cannot stop singing.
Oh my, me neither.
Around the house. And if you would like to go to the identical music page, which exists.
On their website.
You get 90-second snippets of every song in the film. There are about a dozen songs in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Each one worse than the other. One of them, later on that you hear, is entitled Nashville Nights. And it... feels like the Chamber of Nashville Chamber of Commerce in 1987 commissioned a song for their TV spots, and seriously, the chorus goes Nashville tonight.
I feel like chicken tonight.
What is it? It's one of many examples where you do not understand what kind of film you are seeing, why you are seeing it, who thought any of it was a good idea, when will it end, who will survive?
Well, the songs apparently were written by the father and grandfather of the director, so I guess they thought it was a good idea.
This is a family affair, this film.
Uh-huh.
There are so many people with the same last name in the credits. From everything from producing to directing to songwriting. This is a passion project. Mm. And you know it's a passion project because of who's behind it.
Well, it is produced by a company called City of Peace Films.
Yes.
And they have a record label too. And they were obviously able to...
And they
to,
are the record label in the movie that signed...
Right, The Dream.
Baby Number Two and
No. They offer Baby Number Two. They want to buy his song for The Dream
before he walks out. That's
it's
right.
It's not about the money.
That's right.
Brief digression here. City of Peace, et cetera, is a heavily affiliated with a group... of I forget the actual organization name, but basically they are Messianic Jews,
yes,
which are the people who think that if the Christians can convert all the Jews to Christianity,
yes,
then Jesus will come back.
Yes.
You may recall that George W. Bush accepted an offer to speak to this group last fall in Texas, and it gave a lot of mainstream Jewish leaders the opportunity to come out and say, ew.
Right.
No.
Right.
Blech.
Yeah.
But there you have it. Glenn Beck loves these guys.
Yeah.
So take it out for a while.
And that's why at the beginning you hear Ray Liotta talking about
Jews and Christians.
The equivalent, you know, the equivalency of Jews and Christians and how they are inextricably linked in world Bible prophecy to the point where the film becomes middle of the movie for no reason. Related to any of the characters, a brief digression and strange obsession with Israel's Six-Day War.
Yeah, like this is a movie that is set from the 30s to the 70s, where the Civil Rights Movement is never mentioned, and Vietnam is never mentioned, but the Six-Day War sure is.
And the fact that it was resolved was, the film calls it a miracle.
Yeah.
So, back to Baby Number Two.
Yes.
Baby Number Two becomes a Drexel Hemsley impersonator.
Right, because people keep saying, gee, did anybody ever tell you you look just like this very famous person?
Did anyone ever tell you you look identical to this guy?
And at one point...
As though you were perhaps, oh, say, identical twins. The guy, baby number two, is always, oh, no. Like, he's so dumb, even he cannot see.
Even though they give him a scene where he sneaks into the hospital room of... Drexel Hemsley's dying mother,
right.
And she clutches his hand and calls him Dexter, which is his real name, before she gave him up. And he still is not registering any of this.
Yep.
So I'm like, oh, wonder what that was about.
So I'm holding up this picture of this guy in the mirror, and I'm looking at myself, and I can't tell any difference.
So, so all the while, yeah, Ray Liotta's bugging him. You got to be a preacher. You got to be a preacher. And he's like, I don't hear the calling, you know. And he marries the childhood, the teenage sweetheart after weirdly stalking her.
Yes.
But she thinks that's adorable, and then she convinces him to enter this radio competition for, you know, the dream.
Sing like the dream.
Sing like the dream, right?
Yeah.
And so, of course, everybody else is too tall or too fat or too skinny or too whatever. But, of course, this guy is a dead ringer, as we know, for the dream. And so we get to the big finale, and it's this weirdly sort of supper club setup where everyone's sitting at tables with tablecloths.
Yeah.
And he gets... And
much like when the Partridge Family would perform at the end of every
episode. And so then while he's on stage, the dream himself shows up, sits down at the judging table, gives this guy a...
Looking like post-68 comeback Elvis.
Exactly. And is like, yeah, this guy needs to win, and then bolts. Like, God forbid the two of them be on camera at the same time, because I don't think this movie had that in its budget. So then he gets signed to go to state fairs and become a professional impersonator, and then the movie tries to pretend like it's a big dramatic thing about how he wants to perform his own material, but the manager says no.
City lights. Calling my name.
The people came. They want to hear
that
him sing.
That little girl in the city waiting for me.
They don't want to hear your terrible songs. They want to hear his terrible songs.
And so then, he has a friend, played by Joe Pantoliano.
Oh, right. Who's Jewish.
Southern Jewish mechanic himself. Who is unusually obsessed with the dream.
Yeah. Although like
basically has him, instead of a Vargas girl, has him as a pinup on the on the garage wall.
They give him a girlfriend later, just to be safe.
There's a weird thing that he says later in the film. He says to baby number two, after baby number two has become a professional Drexel Hemsley impersonator.
Mm-hmm.
There's only
The manager says this.
Is it the manager?
He has the argument with the manager.
I thought it was Joey Pants.
No. The manager says...
I got that mixed up.
The manager says,
anyway,
there's only one Beatles.
There's only one Elvis.
There's only one Elvis.
There's only one Drexel Hemsley. And then you think to yourself, whoa,
the phone.
We live in a universe now where Elvis exists, but his cultural influence
has been dwarfed
by this Drexel Hemsley character.
Who has a big house in Memphis called...
Dreamland, who looks just like Elvis, acts just like Elvis, sings just like Elvis, has the Blue Hawaii movie career of Elvis.
Has an assonant name of Elvis.
Yeah. So now we have the Elvis. We have... not Elvis, who's more popular and important than Elvis, and his impersonator, who is also his identical twin brother.
Who is the protagonist of the film.
Who is the protagonist of this film.
Then,
God's not dead, everybody. But he is shaking his head.
So then...
I feel sorry for Christianity, actually, after watching this film.
They deserve better.
I don't know if they deserve better, but if you're going to see this because it's a Christian movie and that's kind of your thing, you're going to just be confused. This film is nominally faith-based. Like, it's got it's all in its bones and everything, but it doesn't have an overt Christian message. It just has Christian confusion.
Well, I mean, it has Christian characters, and they talk about their faith, and it pays a lot of lip service to things. And you know, if for the people who are, you know, oh well, you know, there were no bad swears and no
there
violence,
were no bad swears.
You know, if that's enough to get you through, whatever. But so then not Elvis dies in a plane crash, which makes twin number two,
baby number two
collapse,
pass out. Like, so there's psychic twin
juice
powers going on.
Yeah. And then, it ends with him in a big concert performing his own stuff, although ostensibly he's still an Elvis, or a not Elvis impersonator, but the last shot of
everybody just switched over to him.
Yeah,
you look just like him.
The last shot of the film is the wife pregnant, because God makes miracles happen. And yes. I kept thinking, oh, so God wouldn't make Ashley Judd pregnant.
No.
But baby number two's wife gets
the
fruit of her womb.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this movie. We saw it Thursday night in a virtually empty theater, although it turned out that
some folks,
two other people
apparently involved
theater.
In the film. Like, I kind of overheard them
talking.
Yeah,
you were closer than I was.
I overheard them talking about some technical stuff related to the movie, and I thought, oh, somebody's involved with this movie here. Let's have our conversation quietly.
Yeah. But seriously, I call this Oogie Loves for Adults in my rap review.
It pretty much is.
Because this is that kind of movie that only comes along every so often where we were immediately telling people, no, really, go see this movie right now.
Run right out and see this one, because it'll blow your mind. Another thing that really was exciting about it is learning that there was no racism or segregation.
That's
in the
true.
South.
Yes, you could be a black nurse in a white hospital in Tennessee in the 1950s. No problem.
You could be black and pretty much go anywhere and do anything you wanted,
mm-hmm.
and interact with white people in any way you wanted, and get hired at any job you wanted to get hired at.
And apparently, Elvis, or not Elvis, was so universally beloved that he was not remotely a figure of controversy.
Yeah.
You know, he was never banned from television.
No.
He was never, accused of trafficking in, you know, the colored music
or
whatever. Nope.
Nothing. Like, there was no... It's bonkers. Do yourself a favor.
Really.
Buy that ticket.
Go. Yeah. We're begging you. It will soft rock your world.
Your senses will never be the same. Okay, so... You got a DVD pick.
I do.
We're done. Like, basically, we're finished.
Yeah. It was a slow week. We so slow that we actually played Heads Up on What the Flick this week, which if you have not checked that out, please do. It was a lot of fun to do. We have a link on our Facebook page. My DVD pick this week is the new Blu-ray of Elvis. That's the Way It Is.
Yep.
Because fake Elvis gave me a hankering to watch real Elvis.
Yep.
And this is the 1970 documentary, so it's a couple years after the 68 comeback special where he's performing in Vegas. And this is probably the apex, this and the 68 special are the apex of latter Elvis in terms of still having his stuff and still being a really dynamic stage presence. It would not last much longer. But in 70, he still had it.
Mine's the best years of our lives.
Okay.
Autumn has begun.
Yes.
Sort of.
Well,
I mean, it's
technically.
Hot outside still, but...
I don't think... When is autumn technically? Is it
like
the
third week of the month.
The equinox.
But school's back.
Sure.
So it's the fall.
Yeah.
Now, we're in the fall now.
We are.
It's Christmas time. And I think... movies like The Best Years of Our Lives are the kind of movies you watch during the fall because they're sad. And this one's about World War II vets coming home,
mm-hmm.
and realizing that things aren't super great everywhere they go.
Things aren't exactly how they left them.
Right. And it's a wonderful, moving, classic film.
Probably still the best film ever made about returning veterans.
I would say so, yeah.
I don't think anything has come close to it yet.
It was planted in my head because I was talking to a friend about...
Maybe coming home.
I was talking to a friend about a character actor named Steve Cochran, who's mm-hmm. in the movie. And I dig him because he's just one of those tough guys from right. back then. I like those old character actors.
Oh, yeah.
They always played gangsters and villains and cops and military dudes and sure. stuff like that. And, as they got older, they played someone's stern dad. I like guys like that. And he's in it. He's a small part, but yeah. He went up in an Antonioni film called Il Grido, The Cry in English. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Watch The Best Years of Our Lives. It's terrific.
It's a wall-to-wall great cast. Dana Andrews and Frederick March and Myrna Loy and Teresa Wright and Virginia Mayo.
Yeah,
and
Dana Andrews from Laura, another great movie.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Harold Russell, who was a real-life double amputee from World mm-hmm. War II, who the Academy voted him a special Oscar for, giving hope and inspiration to his fellow wounded veterans. And then he actually won Best Supporting Actor that year. So he's the only guy who won two Oscars for the same performance.
Right.
Hoagy Carmichael plays his uncle who owns a bar and plays some piano at one point. I can't remember who plays Teresa Russell's girlfriend, but she's great too. Yeah, it's a wonderful movie. This one, it'll pop up on TCM, and every couple of years I rewatch it, and it's just so great from start to finish. Good.
I want to see it on a screen good somewhere. Choice.
I don't know that I've ever seen it projected, but that
I've
would be
only,
nice.
I've only ever seen it on TV.
Huh. Yeah. We live in Los Angeles.
I know.
We'd get an opportunity.
Yeah.
De Bruges was telling me that Paris has even more rep than LA does. More rep cinema.
We've got quite a bit.
We do.
Here.
But apparently Paris, they really eat that stuff up. And so it's and apparently right now, I don't know if you listened to the show last week.
I did.
But we talked about the Tati reissues.
I did my duty.
All right, fine. The Tati reissues. I really hope those come here.
Duty.
So here's something new and exciting.
What?
We have a new sponsor.
Yay.
Woo.
Thanks, new sponsor.
Hooray. Tell us about it, Dave.
What? Oh, me?
Yeah.
Okay. What's happening, though? It's a sponsor for...
Everybody likes it when you read these things.
I know. Okay, but before I read the... Okay, I've got... Now I have the copy in front of me.
Yes.
But we should tell people before I read the copy that our sponsor is a film that is about to be made.
Correct. It is a Kickstarter.
Our sponsor is for a Kickstarter.
Right. Which begins today, Sunday, September 7th, the day the show is posted.
Yes.
And will be going on for the next month. And this Kickstarter campaign would like your support.
That is correct. So that's do that. Here's the thing. The film that's fixing to get made is called I Was a Teenage Were Skunk.
Okay.
W-E-R-E Skunk.
Mm-hmm.
Werewolf, but a skunk.
Right.
Okay. I like this film already. It's a comedy in the vein of the drive-in monster movies of the 50s.
Okay.
A genre I love.
Absolutely.
Super a lot. Notorious for being light on budget, but heavy on greatness.
Pretty much, you had me at I Was a Teenage.
Yeah. So, I Was a Teenage Were-Skunk. Is the story of mild-mannered teenager, because they always begin as mild-mannered.
Yes, until
they become a were...
Blank.
Something, yeah. Curtis Albright is the character's name. He wants nothing more than to do well in school, go cruising with his pals, and share the occasional malt with his best girl.
And boogie-woogie rock and roll.
And do some boogie-woogie rock and roll. Look, here's the thing. If this movie gets made,
it's automatically going to be...
Even if the budget... I'll tell you this. I hear the budget for Identical was like $7 million.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's something like that is what I hear.
Huh.
Cheap. Yeah. Like under 10.
Relatively, yeah.
If I Was a Teenage Were-Skunk gets made for $70, I bet it's going to be a better film than the Identical.
But they want more than
$70. But they do want more than $70.
Hence the Kickstarter.
Okay, so anyway, one night, while peeping on a neighbor lady, he ain't that mild-mannered.
Woo!
As she's undraping herself for time in her bedchambers.
Her boudoir.
Curtis is sprayed in the face by an enchanted skunk. That's a sexual scenario already, right there. He's checking out the naked lady, and then something sprays on his face.
Yeah.
An enchanted skunk. As a result, whenever Curtis begins to feel turned on, he transforms into a murderous were-skunk.
Wow.
Can Curtis avoid all temptations of the flesh? So basically, anytime you get a boner,
you turn into Pepe Le Pew.
Even
with a death
wish. But okay, now I'm confused. And I'm sure that the script is already done, so maybe they might do some rewrites now that I'm going to give some ideas here.
Oh, great.
What if in the middle of the night, because you know how you wake up in the morning, women don't know what this is, but but guys know. You wake up in the morning, but you got one when you wake up in the morning.
That doesn't necessarily mean that you are
young, old, it doesn't matter.
It just means you have a full bladder, so I don't think that counts.
No, it doesn't always mean you have a full bladder.
Well,
it just means
your mileage may vary.
Look, so if you get that way involuntarily, do you still turn into a murderous were-skunk?
Perhaps the film will answer these and other questions.
I need to know.
Once it gets made, as long as people support
that plot point, that plot point better be addressed.
All right.
Or I'm going to not. There'll be words.
Okay.
Can Curtis avoid all the temptations of the flesh long enough to find the cure before the local sheriff hunts him down and shoots him like an animal?
Ooh.
As mentioned, this old-timey kind of movie was notoriously light on budget, but a light budget is still a budget.
Yes.
That is where you, Linoleum Knife listener,
mm-hmm.
can help. You all know what a Kickstarter is.
Yep.
So here's what's going to happen. I Was a Teenage Were-Skunk has a Kickstarter. We're going to post that link.
Right.
On our Facebook page, on our Twitter.
And on our website.
On our website. You're going to find the link. You're going to go to it. You're going to browse the many rewards,
mm-hmm.
which I have not looked at yet. I'm going to look up those rewards. Decide what donation level is right for you, which one fits, and help this project get up and running. Or you can go to, on your own, navigating the internet solo, teenageweareskunk.com.
Ah.
Remember, that's WERESkunk.com. That's all one word, teenageweareskunk.com. The Were Skunk Alliance thanks you in advance for your support. You got a buck? You got 1 million bucks? You believe in Were Skunks? And
here's a place to...
The cultural need for them?
Right.
Go get it. Go do it. Make that happen for them.
And we thank the Were Skunk Alliance for their sponsorship of this program. And we are done. We have an empty mailbag. We went through all of them, and you guys have not refilled it yet. So please drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Where you can also buy
t-shirts.
All of our t-shirts, which we're almost out of largest, so hurry up.
Commentary.
We got all the other sizes up to 2XL. That's $20. If you live out of the country, it's $20 plus some more because you live so far away. We've got commentaries for sale for $1.99
mm-hmm.
For a variety of films. They are extra episodes that we call Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife. We spend an entire film's running time talking about that film in a critically significant way.
Yes.
We're not just goofing.
No, we actually are talking about the... Yeah, we do some research for those.
Two for the Road.
Yeah.
The Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Clue.
Right.
What else? What was the other one we did?
Josie and the Pussycats.
Josie and the Pussycats is the most recent one.
And White Christmas.
We did White Christmas back in December.
And our next one?
The Poseidon Adventure.
Dun, dun, dun!
My favorite movie as a child.
Hell Upside Down.
My very favorite film when I was 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
A movie that has not seen very much critical attention paid to it. Fan attention is paid to it.
Absolutely.
Boy, there's some rabid fans.
Yeah.
But I've looked and looked and looked, and there's not a lot out there, but I have a lot of thoughts.
I know
as
you
do.
You.
And so that's going to be the next one.
We will let you know when that one is available, but in the meantime, feel free to catch up on our previous extra episodes and snag a t-shirt and just PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can visit our website at linoleum-knife.com, where we link to our other stuff and, you know, offer some occasional original material as well.
Hurry up, we got places to go.
Okay. As always, we thank you for listening, and we invite you to check out our friends all over the internet. Go to christylemire.com. If you're a SiriusXM subscriber, check out The Frank DeCaro Show and Derek and Romaine, where we appear on about a monthly basis. Listen to the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, The Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, the Brett Easton Ellis podcast, which, again, if you've not heard the episode that I appeared on, go back and check it out. It was a lot of fun to do. The Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free on iTunes. And if you would please leave us a review there. If you haven't done that yet, we really appreciate it. And it really does make a difference in our placement on iTunes and helping other people find the show. So it's a big thing. So
it makes more listeners come to us.
Absolutely. So we really appreciate it. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. And if you want to give us good reviews there as well, that's great. Our Facebook page, go like it, is Linoleum Knife Podcast. There's also the Linoleum Knife group page where our listeners interact with each other and talk about movies and other stuff. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at tvtag.com. And again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.